Blog Talk Radio.
All right, folks, this is Rebel Rousing Rich Bergeron.
Yeah, it's
a tornado. And any minute we'll have the psychic on, Psychic Tom, for sure. Just got to wait for my internet to fully boot up here. Give me all kinds of issues today. Sure enough, right at the start of the show, decided, oh, I'm going to take a little break here. Not going to connect to Skype. No interference, no rain, no snow. Nobody else in the house using up the internet connection. But my computer just decides, oh, I'm going to fuck you over when you really need me. Anyway. A couple special birthdays today to announce right off the bat. I don't know if you're aware of this, Tony, but and somebody big from Philadelphia was born today too, believe it or not.
Oh, who's that?
Oh. I mean really big. Like history big.
Ben Franklin?
Exactly. He's born
really?
Yeah. I did not know he and Muhammad Ali shared a birthday until I saw Ben's birthday in the post office calendar today, and then I came home and I see that in my boxing links from Google, it's Muhammad Ali's birthday. So, no wonder he...
Well, I got a way to drink to both of them, because you think of Muhammad Ali, even though I was more of a Joe Frazier guy, you know, obviously an icon in the sport of boxing, which I am the Rain Man. And, of course, Ben Franklin discovered electricity, and my father was an electrician, so without Ben Franklin, my father wouldn't have had a career. And I wouldn't be on the computer right now.
There you go. And he had a great on the media, too, so without the newspaper, we probably wouldn't have the internet. So I got to give him credit there, even though I didn't really create the newspaper, but he was probably one of the most active publishers in American history. So, happy birthday to both of them. You're the only ones alive to celebrate it. But we have a special guest tonight, 40-11 with 28 knockouts, Charles Brewer, retired professional boxer. And I really didn't follow his career that closely, but you could probably tell us a lot about him, Tony, right?
Well, yes, I can. Honestly, Charles, being a Philadelphia guy, I could follow his career. And I was talking to him a few weeks ago, right after we did the interview with Steve Cunningham, and Charles had posted a photo on his Facebook page of him training for a fight over. And I said, is this one of the fights with Sven Aki? And I said, I said one of the robberies was with Sven Aki. And I said, whenever my co-hosts get me riled up on my radio show, all they ever do is mention him and how he retired undefeated. And he confirmed it was not one of the fights against Spinazzi, but he started laughing when I had said how much, just as a fighter, he just annoyed me in no end. And he had a good life left that. And then I realized, with my trainer had told me a couple of years before that, that while he was good friends with Charles, they trained at the same, same gym. So I started mucking along and got him to our show.
All right. Well, we do have Psychic Tom connected.
Good evening,
welcome,
gentlemen. All right. Looking forward to this one.
Tom, how are you?
Good.
We're going to jump right into Charles Brewer. Since we're supposed to have him right at 8:30 here, so.
I just sent him a message telling him we'll be connecting with him soon. A couple of highlights of his career. Obviously he took his record 40-11, 28 knockouts. He was having some trouble making weight at 160, and that was the reason he lost two back-to-back fights in 94. Jumped up to super middleweight. And then he was starting doing really well. Won the title, 1997, and his first defense was at the Blue Horizon, which was the first world title fight at the Blue Horizon. He showed me the Grand Massachusetts boy, trained by Norman Stone. And the following fight after that was against a man by the name of Harold Graham. And Charles was knocked down twice, and he sprained his ankle real bad. And he basically fought that fight on one foot. As Tom was just telling Rich, I was talking to Charles a few weeks ago, and we were talking about how I could never stomach a fighter that, and I'm using quotation marks, Charles lost the title to, a guy by the name of Sven Otke, over in Germany. And Charles was the champion at the game over there and defended Smith. He's never been to the over there, and we're going to get the full story tonight.
All right. Well, connecting in now.
Hello.
Hello, Charles.
Yeah, what's up, man?
Hi, this is Rabble Rouse and Rich Bergeron here. We got Tony the Tornado Pentacal on the phone and our resident psychic Tom Padgett. How's it going?
Good evening, Charles.
So tell us a little bit about your boxing career, how you get into boxing, and what you like most about it, I guess.
One of the things I like about it most is the adrenaline rush that boxing gave me. From age 8 up until the year that I retired, which was about 35 years old, I enjoyed my career. What got me into it? The neighborhood I grew up in.
Yeah, that's a similar story. We get from a lot of guys. I, too, myself, quit fighting on the street because of boxing. So it wasn't as bad a neighborhood as a lot of boxers came from, but I grew up just outside of Boston, this little town called Dorchester. And so I used to get in street fights every now and then, nothing too bad, but boxing straightened me out and made me more distant, gave me a place to take out my aggression without getting in trouble.
Absolutely. And still discipline within me at a very young age. And coming up in the area where I grew up in, it's small, but I committed to the sport of mine and had gotten to a point where one of my things is that you don't choose boxing. Boxing is a very difficult sport physically and definitely mentally. And it takes a special athlete, a special person to be high-caliber. So as though it's a sport where the sport chooses you, but you don't sport.
Charles, when we decided to get the other guy that I recruited you to come on, we had Steve Cunningham on just a few weeks ago, right after his very controversial loss. You guys, and I was blaming him. When Charles Boone is champ of the world, hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, just cut out for a minute.
Yeah, I can hear you now.
Okay. Well, the mic cut off, he's been up Sven Otke. And the one thing I'll say is there's no reason, if he is the title challenger, that the champion should have to defend in his hometown. And looking at the scorecards of that fight, it looks like George Hill had you up 117 to 111 and was outvoted by the other two judges there. What was it like when you had to travel over in his hometown to get robbed of your title?
You know what? First and foremost, the traveling experience, it was in itself a great experience for me. It enabled me to be able to see and be in a place where I probably would have never born, to meet people I probably would have never met. And so that was one. Yes, it has something financially to do with it, of course. But the way that I looked at me being a world champion is that I would challenge anybody on the face of this earth, anywhere on the face of this earth. And if that, in fact, meant going into their home base and challenging, defending what I had worked so hard to acquire, then so be it. Unfortunately, boxing being the way that it is, things did not work out right for me in no way, shape, or form when it came to me fighting Spinocchi on the first night. That fight in itself was probably one of the worst judged fights. And in fact, it was voted that in the main for that year. It was actually the second worst decision. Personally, within that particular fight, I had never in my entire career beat up an opponent as bad as I beat him up on that night. Literally.
Right.
I've never beat down an opponent as bad as I beat him on that night and had my title stolen from me. It was really a hurt piece, really.
Well, I mean, even looking at the score of how it's done on football,
fantasy matchups, the one night between the intermission. And looking at George's scorecard, George had you up 9-3. 9 rounds out of a 12-round fight, he had you winning. And the other 2 straight rounds, I don't know how that's possible. I mean, I watch a lot of fights, and I've seen a lot of bad decisions in my years. I'm sure we all have. But that's just the one thing that aggravates me sometimes. And I think for a while, and like you and you know my trainer, Kevin Burwell, very well. We were talking about it a few weeks ago. Even for a while, I stopped coming to the gym just because in a couple of my last fights, when I was an amateur, I just got screwed over so bad. I was like, you know what, I can't do this no more. I'm working too hard, and I'm having people take this away from me, and it hurt. And now taking it on your level, which is a lot higher on the world championship level, and it's like almost you're stealing from you, and it's a sick feeling.
Absolutely. You know, there's a couple of ways that I look at that. People can job something, and as an athlete, I know my capabilities. I know what I had accomplished and what I had done on that particular night. So that part of me is not hurt in no way, shape, or form. But see, from a business perspective, is where the hurt truly came into play. But I understand it. I understand it like the back of my hand. You know, the fight itself, it wasn't a mandatory. It was me opting to defend my title. And I can tell you this, if I had the opportunity to do it all over again, I probably would. But there would be some very distinct changes. It's somewhat different. Even though, as you just explained and just mentioned, everyone saw Steve Cunningham get robbed. I mean, he's in America and got robbed, still got robbed on live TV. So with that being the way that it is, I understand the business. Yet still, boxing in itself is a dirty sport, and that part of the game is never going to change. I don't care how many sanctions they come out making, it's never going to change. Because money is the root of all evil when it comes to boxing, unfortunately.
Well, yeah.
That's the way it is.
Well, I want to change the topic, and I want to bring up some, obviously, better memories of your career. Now, I know you trained at a very famous gym in South Philly, Augie's Gym. And you were getting ready full shot against Gary Ballard in 97. Kevin actually had brought me down to Hoagie's the one night. I was actually on the shelf for a few weeks because I had strained my shoulder, so they didn't really want me doing much, maybe around the gym, because I loved it so much. So we were down there the one night. We took a ride by Hoagie's, and I think you were not getting ready to spar, and I was hanging out with a friend of mine training down there the one night, a guy by the name of Hassan Williams. They called him the Candyman. And we were watching you getting ready to train, and then it was a few weeks later is when you knocked out Gary Ballard for the title. Other one I wanted to bring up was your first title defense, which I don't know if my two co-hosts realize this, but it was the first and I believe only world title fight at the Blue Horizon. What was it like fighting there, defending the title?
You know what? At the time, I really didn't think much of it. I was fighting at the Blue Horizon. At that point, you know, my name had gotten a bit bigger and had become somewhat of a household name when it came to boxing. So when Russell came to me and asked me what did I think about defending the world championship at the Blue Horizon, I said, let's do it. The only perspective that I looked at it from was the financial one. And I can assure you of this. I made more money in one night at the Blue Horizon than anybody in the history of that building ever made when I defended the title on that night, without mentioning any particulars, but I can assure you of that. But in terms of me defending my title there on that particular night, hey, it was nothing new to me. You know, I didn't look that has been as actually, I was grateful to be able to do so.
That fight, that was on the Tuesday night fights, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, because I'm looking at it right now. The reason I couldn't make that one is I was up in college. I just had a fight the previous week myself, and then we were getting ready for a fight that weekend, which I actually wasn't on the card, but I was still going with all my teammates. So they really didn't want me shuttling home again on a Tuesday night, getting ready for a potential fight that weekend, and then finals coming up. I think my coach may have, may have choked me for that one. But my dad was happy to bust my balls because I think he was at that one. But, yeah, I remember watching it on a USA. And then your fight after that, which – was another interesting little tidbit in your career against Harold Graham. That was the one where you pretty much fought one foot as well.
I landed at the convention center. And what most people aren't aware of, that fight, when I'm asked about what are my most difficult fights, that fight in itself would happen to be the fight that I always mentioned. First and foremost, I was going up against a very, very crafty southpaw and happened to have gotten caught with a straight left hand in the third round. What most people don't know and are aware of, in the third round, when I got knocked down, I twisted my ankle and I tore two ligaments in my right ankle. Now, anybody that knows anything about boxing truly knows that when you're fighting a southpaw, you're keep the left of a southpaw's right foot. Mm-hmm. Along with that, you want to maintain as much balance and stability in your right foot as possible. Well, I could barely put any weight on my right ankle because I had torn two ligaments, and this was the third round. The thing that I was so surprised about, they never detected it throughout the rest of the fight. From the third round on to the round when I knocked him out, neither Harold Graham nor his cornerman had detected that I had injured my ankle, and I couldn't believe it. But I tried my best not to show it. If you're talking about hurting, and if you look at if you remember the fight, look at the tape, when I knocked him, when I finally stopped the fight, I dropped.
The only thing that kept me out of it was too much drinking that night. As soon as it, I rested it, it swelled up like a softball, so I knew there was something wrong the next day. I couldn't even sleep on it. But, yeah, ligaments are bad enough, too. I mean, that's an incredible story that you're able to stay up there. And I'm looking at the scores of that fight when it was stopped. You were up on one card, tied on another, and down on another card. So it could have as a draw.
Yeah,
it went on. So that was just like... It definitely rings a bell when you say that's your toughest fight, and that's a good one to come up in.
I get questioned a lot about the Kyle Raggi fight and kind of the difficulty and you know, guys, well, some people ask the way that I feel. I believe that I made the fight more competitive than it needed to be. We both, upon the initial bell ringing, pretty much threw out the window whatever game plan that we had prepared to execute probably in the prior 2 months in preparation for that fight. I know I did, and I can tell by the way that his father was going off on him, and so did he. That bell rung, and we met in the center of the ring, and that's pretty much where the fight maintained it, right in the center of the ring, from round 1 through 12. But I can tell you this, and most people are aware, that made for a very, very, very entertaining night of fighting.
And also, I'm trying to remember this. I was there the night where you beat Zuniga, the unanimous decision down in Philadelphia. I remember that. That was I think that was when Omar Sheikh fought Thomas Tate on the same card.
No. You know what? Was it? It might have been. That was at the First Union. That's what it was called at that time. Yep. And as a matter of fact, that fight was the first fight that Sugar Ray Leonard had promoted when he started doing his promotions. That was the first fight that he had promoted.
Yeah. That fight, it said the title was vacant after reigning champ Thomas Tate had to face Senat for the... But you were saying something, Tony?
Yeah, I was saying, what I remember about that card more than anything is they were showing pictures in the Ring magazine. A bunch of the Philadelphia Eagles were there. Donovan McNabb was there. I think maybe Brian Dawkins was there. I remember just seeing the picture of, I think it was Bernard Hopkins and Donovan McNabb in Ring magazine. Kevin Burwell got me those tickets because he got me, we weren't on the floor, but we were like front row of the bleachers, the concourse area.
Right. Okay.
Tom, you're awful quiet. I know you must have some kind of question in the back of your head.
No, not actually. For the most part, I'm expecting questions from you guys.
No, I'm talking to our other guy, Tom. Psychic Tom, are you there? I guess he's not. He can't hear us or something. Tom. All right. I don't know what happened to him, but Charles, maybe one of the best moments or a couple real highlights that you remember that from your boxing career. Can you give us a little bit of a description of maybe some of the best moments in your career that you experienced as a boxer?
Absolutely. Number one, quite naturally, the most gratifying moment of my career was winning the world championship. That in itself was very, very, very gratifying, man. It felt as though all the commitment, all the, man, all the training, all the sacrificing that I had done from day one, the moment I stepped foot into a gym, that it had paid off. And that in itself, man, it's a feeling that I just can't, it's unexplainable. it's a very emotional moment. And that, for me, is probably the most gratifying moment in the sport. Now, me as an individual, now, when it comes to boxing, and, you know, as I said, I don't play boxing. I never did. I take it very, very serious. And in that, I'm one of those type of people that know me, that know of me in boxing. They see me just as that individual. And it's such a direct contrast to, say, people that I grew up with, even some people that I'm going to school with, because, believe me, I have a very silly side to me. But most people that know me personally, the part that I show and display as a boxer and as a fighter is in direct contrast with that person. The people that know me from boxing, they only see that, you know. But again, I don't play boxing. I never did. I take it seriously. It is a sport. You can literally, and you're not even in full competition. You know, you can be in the gym just playing around, just sparring, and a life can be taken. And you know, that's something that I take very, 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 very serious.
Now, speaking of serious, how did you get such a serious nickname, the Hatchet?
I got that name from my trainer, Boogaloo Watts. He gave me that name as a manager. And believe it or not, I had a stablemate. I was a Hatchet. He was a Hammer. Named the Hammer Jones. And then believe the hype, he lived up to that name, believe me. This guy, it's so crazy. My stablemate is now Boogaloo's United, who's daughter. Me and him, the honor that we are the exact same age. We were born the same day, same year. William Jones, if you had seen me and William in sparring sessions, you wouldn't even think we knew each other. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people that have seen and witnessed us two spar each other was like, they never saw a sparring session like that, and you wouldn't even think that we knew each other the way that we would go at it.
And, you know, I mean, obviously, the Philadelphia sparring sessions are legendary. People talk about, like, sometimes how they're tougher than, you know, real fights. They're tougher than, you know, some world title fights.
Absolutely.
And exactly what you're talking about. I remember a lot of times down at Marion Anderson, down I remember telling him how I would spar, even though he was training me. He would get me in there sometimes and try to show me a lot of little tricks of the trade. And so my first amateur fight, I lost. And then that's started training me. And the next one, I won by stoppage. It was against, I actually fought two weight classes up in the fight. And the kid was a lot bigger than I was, but I was much more skilled. And every time I would hit him with a good shot, he was clinching me. And I remember coming back to the gym, and I was like, he kept clinching me, and I stopped him, but it could have been so much easier. And he goes, oh, he's clinching you, huh? He goes, you know what you're going to start doing from now on? I said, what? He goes, when they clinch you and they rest their chin on your shoulder, bounce. And pop them in the mouth at your shoulder. That'll get them to get off you. you know, there were some times that he would put me on the bag, it was him in the arm. He came into the camp a couple of years after I was, you know, and I said, okay, today we're going to have to hit the bag. I missed it. I realized that I was basically calling a body shot. I was handing an elbow. And they're like, you're not being dirty, you're being physical. And yeah, we had a kid at our gym. I was about 21 years old, and I was already a collegiate All-American. And then this other kid came in, and just like she said, if you didn't know, you would have thought we were blood enemies, because we would get in there and our styles meshed so well, and we worked so hard that you would have thought we were blood enemies. I loved him. I loved him like a brother. His name was Barry. I don't remember his last name, but he was a little taller than me, and he was about a 165 pounder, and at the time I was fighting between 172 and 180. And I'm being, you know, I'm a shorter, I'm a stocky guy, and Kevin used to always joke because I was Italian, I would fight a lot like Rocky Marciano. And what he had me doing with this kid was, you know, because the kid had a real tight defense, which is banging the arms. And we got out of there after one session, and my nose looked like it was about to fall off my face. And his arms were completely purple from top to bottom with welts on them. And actually, the gym stopped. Barry Anderson Rec Center stopped, and we had pros there watching us and applauding us getting out of the ring. And I remember they smiled at me and they said, To get an ovation in a Philadelphia sparring session means something.
Absolutely.
That's tough.
I've had my fair share of wars in the gym, absolutely. But I can tell you this, I took one team for the season, and that's definite. And that goes across the board. I mean, I spar with guys from middleweights up to heavyweights, and I dealt my fair share of blows to each and every one of them.
I think the largest guy I ever started with when I was Marlon Anderson was Gerald Schiff, who ended up being a heavyweight contender. Now, starting with him, I was about 180 pounds at the time. It was 2 weeks before my 21st birthday in 1990. I was just getting in there with him because I was really the only guy in that night, and he was just playing defense on me, but he got me in a bear hug at one point and just smiled at me, and I'm winging body shots like you wouldn't believe, and he's just smiling. And then he got me in a corner, and he just basically, like, I felt like I was in there with Andre the Giant because I couldn't move. He was just so physical and so. And he's like, I'm just wearing you out. And he was just laughing. I mean, he's tapping me on the head and stuff. But, I mean, you got to get in there, you know, because there are some times you're going to get in there with a guy that's strong as a bulldog, and it ain't.
All right, folks, this is Rattler House of Rich Bergeron, and we're back. I don't know what happened with Psychic Tom, if he's still there. Psychic Tom, you there? I don't know what happened with him. That might be a Blog Talk Radio thing. But, Charles, I don't know where we left off there, but you got anything that you wanted to talk about that we didn't bring up yet?
Pertaining to my career, it's 15 years that I competed in the sport of boxing, and I enjoyed every last minute of it. I lived it, I loved it, I truly enjoyed it. I gave my absolute all, and I was grateful to be able to retire from it healthy, both mentally and physically.
Nice. That's always good.
For me to get you on tonight, and hopefully I get to see, because I still try to make as many of the field cards as I can, and hopefully I'll get to bump into you down there and you know, talk to you in person.
All right. Sounds good, man.
All right. So, Charles, it was great having you on tonight, and like I said, best of luck in all you do, and thank you for being such a wonderful representative for boxing in the city of Philadelphia. Thank you.
And Charlie, anything you wanted to thank or give a shout out to before we let you go?
I'm gonna shout out to my creator. Without him, I would not have accomplished the whole that I accomplished in my career and life. And of course, I gotta give a shout out to my support. Here's my wife.
All right, well, we definitely appreciate it, Charles, and wish you best of luck in your future. Just keep up the good work, and glad to have you on tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks for dealing with all the technical difficulties there. All right, Charles, any final thoughts to wrap it up or anything like that?
You know what? I actually had some final thoughts. I actually rolled out some thank yous and I pretty much expressed them.
All right.
I'm just grateful, man, again, for everything I had to have accomplished for it. For the excitement that I put in, and
instead, we're also aware of guest lines ringing busy. Our techs are aware of all of these issues. Now, I know Tom was able to get in earlier. Instead of a question, I couldn't hear him. Can you hear us, Tom? And it's showing his number up there on hold, but I'm muting him and then bringing his mic back on, and I can't hear him. Going on there. I suppose I could try typing in his number here. The add contacts, and then we'll call him directly because it does show his number on the screen. Oops, I can't cut and paste it for some reason.
We found out last week that we can go past 10 o'clock and for all the stuff we got to cover and just kind of edit everything down and put it on the archive, right?
But actually, I mean, it just records it like it's a regular show. So
yeah.
Even if we go past the time, at least this happened last week. I don't know if it's going to feed every week. I hope so. It looks like we're going to have time tonight.
Yeah, what we do is, I mean, we lost about a good 35. We lost Charles at the end of the after right before right after 9, we didn't get back up 5 minutes ago. I'm like, I'm still talking to him right now. I told him, you know, we're gonna get out into the town and you know, just pointed the parts out where there's nothing to report. It makes it pretty seen.
Well, if you cannot connect to talk radio, it doesn't just record empty air. It will cut off the recording. So it's like as soon as I reconnect, then it just seamlessly connects that to where we left off. So it shouldn't be bad. The trailing off will kind of be random probably, but then it'll come right back to where we did. So it shouldn't be too bad of a problem there. So I'm going to try to call Tom direct. Let me get this window up.
Yeah, and if it lets up there past 10 o'clock, and then we can, you know, we've still got some good boxing matches to talk about coming up this weekend. I'm sure we got, news in the world of mixed martial arts. That way we can go on and we can, pretty much give it a full recap and good stuff from all of our sports.
Correct. Yeah, this is weird for one to be Blog Talk Radio's problem, but I wonder if they're in the same area as the, you know, hosting for Skype, because I know my number always comes up different, but a lot of the times it comes up 661, which I think is
Kelly. Yeah, that's what I told Charles when we were, when I had texted him this morning to confirm his interview, and he said, yeah, unavailable or 661, so just that way you know
when
it's us.
Good
evening.
Hey, there he is.
Okay, you know, this is frustrating. Everything just went completely blank, and the reception was pretty bad right from square one, and so I figured I'd get out and get back in, and it's been busy all night long.
Yeah, it's actually a Blog Talk Radio problem.
That's what it sounds like, and it was so frustrating. I hear you. Are you there? Are you there? And I'm yelling at the computer. Yeah, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it showed your number. It's showing your number. It's showing your number in the waiting. But I can't connect here for some reason. So that's. But there's a. Whole message on the top of
that was
the
a,
radio apologizing.
That was a great interview, though. Yeah, that was definitely a great interview. Yeah, I missed out on it, but hey, we'll have it again sometime.
Yeah.
And what was great was during the time that we were having all the problems and it was we weren't able to get through. I mean, I must have tried to call a bunch of times thinking I might be able to get through to him and find out what was going on. I had Charles on the applicant to say, he's emailed, he's I have the name, he goes, dude, call Trump. I said, I didn't want to keep him waiting any longer. If you want to send me like your final thoughts and any chat outs, I said, email them to me, and I said I'll record them when we get back on. That way, I don't take up any more of your time. And right as I was typing something back to him, we got back up.
Well, since we just spent the bulk of the trip thing, I might as well take a moment to get MMA in. Of course, the last final hurrah of Strikeforce was this past weekend, and they had a pretty good show. Wasn't that bad. A lot of good fights. I was actually kind of surprised that Scott Coker came out and kind of plugged Showtime after they're the ones that kind of killed, or supposedly their dropping of their TV deal was what kind of killed it. But Scott Coker did the accompanying and said, you know, keep watching Showtime. There's going to be MMA on Showtime. And kind of blew me over, a guy that seemed to care so much about it and didn't have any anger or animosity towards Showtime for killing the promotion. So I wonder if maybe he blames CUSC more than anything, but who knows. Anyway, the main event was really the only fight that I didn't see on this card, unfortunately. I heard it on the computer, and tonight I had difficulties, and the whole thing froze, but I could hear the commentary. I just couldn't see the fight. So I know that Nate Marquardt's leg got really bad knock from Tarek Safadine's kicks there. Actually, there's a big list of Strike Force guys that were assigned to the both Nate Marquardt and Tarek Safadine have made the cut since the promotion collapsed here. But it was a five-round fight. Safadine was the underdog and ended up winning the fight. I don't know, did you get to see that, Tom?
No, but I've got a lot of the recaps. And, you know, Nate is one of those guys that is so hard to predict. Just when I think he's on a roll or something, you know, he comes up short. Every time I write him off and he comes back strong, he's really hard for me to figure. So I don't know where he goes from here.
And Daniel Cormier in the co-main event there, heavyweight, fought a guy, Deion Staring. It wasn't very, you know, much of an impressive fight. It was basically, described beforehand, and Staring as the only guy, that's how they described it. He really didn't knock him out. It was a TKO. He was just taking too many punches without blocking, basically. He didn't even really seem that badly hurt, but John McCarthy stopped it at about the 4:02 mark, and that was it. Cormier, after the fight, called out Frank Mir. He wants to have a claw. That fight is actually sealed and delivered. I'm not sure exactly when that's going to be, but he also called out John Jones. He said after the Mir fight, he's going to drop down to light heavyweight and kick John Jones' ass. Since then, came out and said, stop talking about dropping to 205 and do it. But I don't know if you can do that that fast.
Yeah.
But we also had the one that hasn't made the UFC cut yet. That is the biggest name out there who hasn't in Strikeforce. We got Josh Barnett. Had a quick arm triangle choke submission over Nandor Gelmino in the first round. That was another fight I totally missed, actually. Another technical difficulty problem. And then what I did see was Gegard Mousasi, pretty much Mike Kyle. First round rear naked choke after basically emergence there after a long injury timeout.
Yeah. I really think that was the gratifying fight of the night as far as I'm concerned. Mike Kyle has crossed the line on so many occasions, and I do think he's one of the few people in the sport that people really want to see either retired or hurt and severely hurt with some of the stuff he's pulled. I mean, the eye gouges, the biting, and that was great. And supposedly after the fight, he said he'd had enough quitting.
Yes, so. He has retired.
He's a hero. If he achieved that, folks will love him.
Right. Okay. We also had Ronaldo beat Ed Herdman by Kimura submission. Pretty well executed there. Dominating at 5 points and just locked that on, and I mean, picture perfect. Twisted it so far back behind his back that Herman just had no choice but to tap. That was in the first round at the 3:10 mark. And then, of course, what would a final Ryan Couture son of Randy, fought KJ Nunes, somebody that I really thought would outclass Couture, being him, being the, you know, seeing as he was such a late addition to the sport. He didn't really follow in his footsteps, in the footsteps of his father from a young age. He just kind of jumped late in his 20s there. So it was a big surprise to see him matched up against like KJ Nunes, who had a much more extensive record. And I thought a much bigger name. And then this fight comes along. Couture, a little bit different from his father's style. Of course, he's going to have something different. But he threw a lot of kicks, a lot of kicks, a lot of knees. Roughed KJ up a little bit with a cut on the forehead at one point. And this was a fight I kind of really saw the tail end of. So I don't really know if it was as controversial as it they made it out to be. But KJ Nunes, the announcers were at least convinced that he won the fight, and Ryan Couture got the win. And both of them actually were invited to the UFC, so it's kind of an interesting little twist there. I actually came out in Vegas, and comment to me that he wanted to stay in Strikeforce for his entire career. It turned out he stayed in Strikeforce for their entire career.
Yeah.
But he said he didn't really think he wanted to go into the UFC because they like to keep you under their thumb, was his words. So now he's under their thumb.
Yeah.
Good luck. Another guy who made the transition, or who will be making the transition, Kennedy, had a win over Trevor Smith by submission guillotine choke in round three at the 136 mark. Pat Healy beats Kurt Holabaugh by unanimous decision in the fourth fight of the night. Hodger. Oh, yeah. It's all H's with those guys. Gracie. Victorious arm triangle choke over Anthony Smith. That was ended in the second round at the 316 mark. And we had Adriano Martins beat Jorge Gurgel by unanimous in the second fight of the night. And in the first fight, Esteban Payan beat Mike Bravo by TKO. That ended in the second round, 401 mark. Of course, we had... we'll have to run down the UFC fight this week. Can't be on FX7. I don't have the title thing on this. My notes here. I think it's UFC on FX7, the one that's next Wednesday. But anyway, the main event there is Michael Bisping versus Vitor Belfort, and these guys, boy, they hate each other.
Yeah.
They have been going back and forth to trash. They actually have more records. So Belfort has six more losses. Bisping has 10. Bisping has 4. Belfort has 21 wins. Bisping has 23. It should be an interesting fight. I think it's very well matched. And Bisping had a lot of big current names, but nobody with as much experience, I think, as Belfort has. So we'll see how it goes for him. I think there's a lot of Bisping haters out there who would like to see Belfort.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I've never been a gigantic fan of him, but I don't really have anything against him. But the thing here is, where's Belfort at here? I mean, he had a great effort against Jones, but which Vitor is going to show up?
Right.
That is so important here because as Bisping, no matter what you may think of him personally, and I think a lot of you, the decision over Matt Hamill, if you remember that one going back several years.
Also, his tactics, Rivera, if I'm correctly, he was spitting and beat him while he was on the ground at one point.
He does have a difficult style, though. And if he can get that boxing game working, you know, his lateral movement's just phenomenal. So I don't know. I just keep going back and forth. Finally, I'm ready to just flip the coin. If this thing would win, it wouldn't upset me too much. Let's see him get his chance. Maybe Vitor's had his chance. So, see what happens.